You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Dave Wyman and Michael Bumpus, and we have on the line via the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, Mike Petrello from MLB.com. Mike, how are you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing great, guys. I'm not sure I've ever been on a pest control hotline before.
No, we just got a new sponsor here. It doesn't mean you're a pest, okay? We love having you here. I was looking at your bio. You've written about lots of baseball for lots of places, ESPN, FanGraphs, et cetera. Now you're at MLB.com, and I was looking at some of your tweets. It seems like you're really fired up for the baseball season, watching Anthony Rizzo hit a ball back to Chicago. This is very fun. How excited are you for this season, and are you thinking that it's going to be more like a normal season, Mike?
Well, compared to last year, it couldn't possibly be less like a normal season, you know? I mean, so far, so good. It sounds like the first week or so has gone pretty well. You know, the country is still not in great shape in a lot of places, but as the vaccine moves on, it certainly seems like we'll have a better opportunity. And I think the most important thing is we learned a lot of lessons last year. You know, like early on, the Marlins shut down and the Cardinals shut down. There were some isolated cases elsewhere. But then, you know, before that last game of the World Series, I think the sport went like 6 weeks or more without a positive test. So I think the players did a really good job following the rules. I think that the sport and the union did a good job, you know, trying to adapt in the best way they can. So, you know, fingers crossed. The fact that we have games on right now is a really good sign.
Mike, before I ask you about the Mariners, I'm an L.A. guy from L.A. Please tell me my Dodgers are the best team in the bigs right now.
Oh, I grew up a Dodger fan, so I could talk your ear off about how good the Dodgers are. Yeah, listen, they won the World Series, and they just signed the defending National League Cy Young Award winner. And I don't really think Trevor Bauer is the best pitcher in the National League, but he was for 13 starts last year. So, the Dodgers are in great shape.
Yeah, we're tired of hearing about Michael Bumpus's L.A. teams. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, I will ask you about the Mariners. Let's go back a couple of weeks, and I know this was national news with the thing with the CEO or president, Mathers, who came out and mostly, you know, said some things he shouldn't have, certainly, that were insensitive. But you know, the other thing is, you know, he talked about the service time and the clock on that and everything. It was just, I guess, being sort of a, Mike and I are more like, you know, football insider type of guys, but just from the, you know, looking at this from in general, it's like everybody already knew that that's going on. It's just that you can't talk about it. Like, I guess somebody compared it to like Fight Club, the movie Fight Club. That's the number one rule. You don't talk about Fight Club. But, you know, that how big of an impact, how big of a gotcha moment was that for the Players Association and for the players?
Yeah, the other things he said were obviously, you know, disgusting and borderline racist in some ways and just truly disappointing. And, you know, everything you just said about the situation is correct. But I think the important thing here is that, as many people know, this is the final year of the current collective bargaining agreement. You know, so labor tensions were already pretty high. The two sides, the owners and the players union, had already shown kind of an inability to work together super well. And this isn't helping things. And I think what you've seen in the wake of that, you know, you saw some players coming out publicly and talking about it. And some of those were like established players, veterans who'd been around for a minute. But you also saw Jared Kelnick talking about it. This is a guy who obviously hasn't been in the big leagues yet. And it's already coming up with him. And I'm trying to see the silver lining here. And I hope the fact that that's becoming a light is being shined on it. Like you said, everybody already knows that that's a thing. I'm hoping that means we can get to a better method of solving this problem. And I think what we need to do is just stop making this idea appealing to teams. We can talk about the morality of it, the ethics of it, whether it's right or wrong. And there's certainly whole conversations about that to be had there. But the fact is, it's better for the players when they get to the bigs as soon as they can. It's better for the fans. Certainly, it's better for the sport. How do we take out the fact that it's probably, appealing to a team to trade off a couple of weeks now for an entire season later? I don't know what's going to come of it. I don't know if there's going to be something that's arranged in the new CBA. There's obviously a million things that need to be talked about. But the fact is, this comes up every year, and it's never a good conversation. It doesn't help the sport. It doesn't help the players. And I think now is clearly the time for this to be worked out.
Yeah, we're talking to Mike Petrello from MLB.com. Now, here's my question, Mike, and I've asked this a number of times because, you know, the Major League Baseball Player Association, their union is the strongest, I think, and always has been. You know, and I was part, and so was Bump, as part of the NFL Players Association, which has not been strong. But this is a strong one. But they're going to want something out of this. They're going to want something at the next collective bargaining agreement. Could you see that this might actually end up hurting players in the long run? Because if you rush a guy up, they always talk about that. We talk about that here in Seattle, about Dustin Ackley, you know, maybe Mike Zunino, they were rushed up. And if now it's like it has some parameters in there where it makes it more about how many, you know, at bats or X number. And there's kind of a feel for bringing guys up, right? The manager's like, yeah, I see the numbers, but it's, you know, he's not ready yet, and we're going to ruin him if we bring him up too quickly. I mean, could you see any complications to that? And am I right? I mean, do you think the Players Association is definitely going to want to attack, you know, get some standards on when to bring a guy up going forward?
Yeah, the reason this is so important to them is where you tend to get paid the most is when you're in free agency, right? When you can mm-hmm. negotiate with all 30 teams and you're not limited to, you know, just the rules with the one team you've got. And the longer it takes you to get to the bigs and start collecting that service time, the longer it takes you to get to free agency. You know, right. So that is their number one goal. And I'm not so sure that focusing on free agency is the right idea anymore. I think we've learned a lot that players are better prepared, younger than they've ever been before, you know, so I think a focus might be better put on increasing the minimum salary or something like that. But to your point, I think the answer is it depends on what system would be put in place. I know in some sports they have something where it's like, you know, you're drafted and your clock starts the day you're drafted, not, you know, when the team wants to bring you to the big leagues. That helps a little bit in that it takes the decision out of the team's hands to some sense, but then you're right. That could lead to a guy being rushed up to the bigs before he's ready. So the answer is everybody seems to agree that this is a problem and that we need to do a better way of, you know, going about this whole process. I haven't really heard a great solution as to what is the right thing to do. Like, the team is always going to have the choice to put a player on their roster or not. Like, I don't think you can take that decision out of the hands of the team. So then what you really need to do is figure out, are we changing free agency? Are we making it, you know, 4 years instead of 6 years? Are we just paying the younger guys more sooner? Is it a combination of those things? I think that's probably going to be the way this works out. And so I think I can see your scenario, but I'm not sure that's how the rules will actually play out.
Hey, Mike, we talk about the Mariners, and there's a lot of young talent, right? You got Julio Kelenic, JP, Kyle Lewis, all these guys in the organization is saying, be patient, 2021, 2022. How do you see the AOS shaking up this year? And do you feel like it's realistic for Mariners fans to expect this team to be competitive anytime soon?
Competitive, yes. Contenders, no, not this year. The way I look at it is I still think the Astros are the class of the West, although the fact that Framber Valdez got hurt today doesn't help them. I think the A's obviously have been very good. I think the Angels have been pretty good. None of those teams are great in the sense that the Dodgers are great, and the Padres and the Yankees might be great, but I think they're all better than the Mariners. But what Seattle does have this year is the guys who could be part of the next very good Seattle team are either here now or coming soon. You know, you can't really say that about a lot of the other teams that are rebuilding. Like, you look at the Pirates, they maybe have one guy who could be part of the next good team. But this is a big year for Seattle. Like, I would watch this team and not worry so much about the wins and losses, but I could look at a lot of the guys on this roster and say, okay, well, you know, Justice Sheffield really takes this next step forward. And, you know, Mitch Haniger proves he's healthy, or Kyle Lewis backs it up and shows he's the real deal, or J.P. Crawford, and then obviously Kelenic and Rodriguez at some point. Like, I think a successful year for the Mariners isn't 90 wins, and it's not the wild card or anything like that. It's getting to the end of the year with a lot of the same position players they've already had last year and saying, okay, we know more about these guys. I know this guy can lead off for a contending team. This guy, not so much. He's proven we can't count on him. We have to go in another direction. But I think there's a lot to like about this roster, about this team, and I think it could be a fun year if you're not just focused on coming in first.
Yeah, we're talking to Mike Petrello from MLB.com. Today, Kelenic while he hit an opposite field home run, they were interviewing Scott Servais, and this Kelnick kid, and of course he was very adamant about that he should have been up helping the team at the big club. And, you know, the kid has been, I don't know how much you followed him, Mike, but he's very cocky. I like that about him. He looks like he certainly has all the pieces, all the parts, and the confidence and everything to go along with it. What do you think about what you've seen out of Jared Kelnick?
Yeah, I live in New York, so trust me, Mets fans love to talk about Jared Kelnick. So
yeah, I'll bet.
I've been watching him for a while. Right. He looks like the real deal. I mean, there's nothing you've seen so far, whether it's in the minors or, you know, I'm not going to put too much on today's game, although I did see that ball, which was hit pretty well. That says anything other than he's going to be a star. I mean, he's got the pedigree, right? He was a number 6 overall pick, and he's on all the top prospect lists and performed. He's done it all. The only thing he hasn't done is get really any experience at the high minors. You know, 21 games in AA and no time in AAA, and that's not his fault. Obviously, there was no minor league season last year. And I think that's going to put the Mariners in kind of a difficult spot, because the fact that he hasn't really played above AA or even like more than a month in AA would normally give them a legitimate baseball reason to say, okay, let's, you know, put him in AA, AAA for a couple weeks, see what happens, call him up. But now, if he plays well in the spring and he's not in the opening day roster, after all the stupid stuff that Kevin Mather said, that's going to be a really big problem for them. So I actually think that backfires in a way they didn't expect. Now they have more pressure to put him on the roster and not less. And, you know, listen, Lewis is going to play center. Haniger, if he's healthy, is going to play right. I'd like to see some of the other guys in left. You know, I'd like to see, like, Trammell, maybe, if you bring him up, or see what Jake Fraley can do. But listen, you have Kelnick. He's going to be the next big star. If he doesn't look terrible in spring, and certainly didn't start that way today, I think you're going to have him up there.
Hey, Mike, legend out here in Seattle, Felix Hernandez signs with the Orioles. What's a good year for Felix Hernandez and the Orioles this year?
Well, I guess a good year for him is just making starts, right? Because he didn't pitch last year, and I kind of thought his career was over, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I loved watching him at his peak. You know, even from out here in New York, he was one of my favorite pitchers to watch. But, you know, over the last, 5 years, he just hasn't been the same. The velocity's been gone. So if he can stick in the rotation and give them a veteran guy and, you know, be a competent league average starter, I know that's not like a high ceiling, but based on the trajectory of his career the last couple of years, I think that would be a success for him. You know, the Orioles are in a much different place than the Mariners are, because the Orioles don't really have any of their next generation on the team right now. You know, this team is going to lose 110 games. They're not going to be fun to watch, whereas the Mariners might not win that much this year, but I think they will be fun to watch. The Orioles are really, really a long way away. Like, the farm system's improved, but they play in a tough division with 4 competitive teams right now. I would be happier being a Mariners fan than an Orioles fan for this year and probably the next 5.
We're talking to Mike Petrello from MLB.com. And, Mike, tell us about James Paxton. We revisited this earlier in the week, because, you know, we've known James here. He was here before, just a great guy. And I was thinking, wasn't there something with, like, an eagle or something? And then went and looked back. I don't know if you ever saw that footage where, you know, there was an American bald eagle that was flying around, and it came, you know, and tried to perch on his shoulders, and he just kind of casually moved, like no sign of panic, anything. That's one of the, like, my favorite things about James Paxton, that he's just so calm, and, you know, his eyelids are kind of always at half mast, very, you know, cool customer. And I'm not sure if you ever saw that video, but it's worth watching. And what do you think that the Mariners are going to get out of James Paxton this year?
Yeah, I always get a kick out of when a guy has been traded for prospects and then comes back and is teammates with that prospect. So, like, yeah, you know, in Tampa Bay, Chris Archer and Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows are all on the same team. Right. And in Seattle, so Justin Sheffield is there. And I think that's pretty interesting that that's a guy who's hopefully a big part of their future, and now the other guy is there. I think Paxton is one of a lot of players where you can kind of just ignore 2020 entirely, just write it off. It was a short season. He got hurt. He only threw in 5 games. The fact that his velocity was down is not great. But again, he wasn't healthy. So if he's healthy, which it seems like he might be, I think people overlook the fact that in 2019 with the Yankees, he was pretty good. You know, 150 innings, over 11 strikeouts per 9, 3.80 ERA. Like, he's not, in my view, like a high-level ace in the sense of, you know, like a Kershaw or Bauer or Walker Buehler or those guys. But on this team, he doesn't need to be. You know, if he can go out there on a relatively young rotation, aside from Kikuchi, and stick there every 5 days and give you, you know, six above-average innings every 5 days, that's great. He just has to be healthy enough to do it. And I think he can be. Like, I actually really liked the signing for Seattle a lot. I thought other teams would swoop in and steal him away, but they didn't. And I think this is going to work out really well for both sides.
Mike, how serious do you think the Mathers situation is? It is serious. I don't want to downplay. But as far as getting free agents and guys to come to Seattle, are they going to look at this situation and go, oh, no, I don't want to be there in that situation? Or does it really fall on the players and the managers? How does that affect free agency?
I don't think it's going to matter at all. He's not going to have any role, you know, in the day-to-day situation. And by the time the Mariners are ready to sign free agents, I mean, let's be honest, next winter I think is going to be a little rough with the negotiations for the collective bargaining agreement. You know, we all hope there's not a work stoppage, but that's a possibility. And it's possible that the Mariners aren't really in, like, the big ticket free agent game for another 2 years from now, like when they are truly ready to win, when the sports labor situation is more sorted out. And 2 years from now, any checks they write are going to hit the bank account just as well as anybody else's checks. You know, I would be really surprised, as terrible as this situation is, as horrible as the things he said are, you know, if they go out and have this nice young core and they're ready to spend some checks, I don't think this will hurt them, at least in that regard.
One of the bigger question marks here, you say Kikuchi. I think you wrote a couple of things about him, Mike. We're talking to Mike Petrello from MLB.com. on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. You say Kikuchi's been question mark here. There's some that love, some that don't like. What do you think? What do you see as far as his 2021 season?
I'm pretty in. I saw him in person in 2019, and to be honest, I wasn't that impressed. You know, the velocity wasn't there. The secondary pitches didn't look like much, and I guess I sort of wrote him off as a failed investment. And I looked back at him last year, and even though the numbers weren't there, like, I know he's at an ERA over five in both of his 2 years, the underlying stuff I think was really good. I mean, if you look at the velocity, you know, up 2.5 miles an hour, it's one of the biggest jumps in baseball. You look at the strikeout rate from 16% to 24%, one of the biggest jumps in baseball. Ground ball rate went up. You know, he added a new pitch. He added velocity. And I know he had a 5.17 ERA, but there's a lot of other, you know, ERA-like stats that kind of don't look at the outcomes so much as they look at what went into it in terms of strikeouts and walks and hard hit prevention. So if you look at the Statcast ERA version, the way he pitched was more like a 3.51, which is pretty good. You know, I was really impressed by the way he was able to up that velocity. And I know he talked this winter about improving his mental game. And I think they might have a find there. You know, again, I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star. I'm not saying he's going to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. But if you could throw 95 from the left side with a pretty good cutter slider thing and a decent changeup, that's going to get you a pretty long way towards success. And I think if he can just avoid the disaster innings that kind of beat him up a little bit last year, the numbers are going to look a lot better because you already saw the breakout happening, you know, under the hood, if not at least on the back of the baseball card.
Well, I know my co-host, who is off for the day, is going to love hearing that because he's got some question marks about Yusei Kikuchi. But last question for you, Mike, and really appreciate your time. You mentioned Mitch Haniger earlier. I'm a sucker for comeback stories, and you know Mitch Haniger has really gone through it. He was at one point here one of the untouchables that they would never trade, and had an all-star year, but then, you know, got hit in the face, first of all, and then got hit in the groin and had all kinds of injury problems and everything. I'm not sure how closely you've been following that story, but he's had some interesting workouts that he's posted online, and, you know, I'm curious what you expect. Are you also a sucker for a comeback story like this one? Because this is a pretty good one. For most guys who know, like, getting hit there with a pitch, oh, man, I mean, it's – everybody kind of crosses their legs every time they think about that story.
Yeah, I think the term I heard was ruptured, and that is, I do not envy his experience.
That's an ugly word, right?
Last year or two. Yeah. I can't say he's going to be the comeback player of the year, if only because I think Trey Mancini has that locked up, who is coming back from a cancer scare with Baltimore. So that's slightly worse. But as far as Haniger goes, you know, he's 30 years old, right? So it's not like he's old. It's not like he's young. He is, in theory, in his prime. And while you're right about those injuries, and I certainly wouldn't wish those on anybody. I think the silver lining there is those were kind of flukes, right? It's not like a chronically bad back or you know, a bad knee or something where you're like, okay, this is going to impact him going forward. I certainly hope what's happened to him, you know, is not going to impact him, but those are not necessarily baseball injuries, you know? And I think for him, missing 2020, I don't want to say it was a good thing, certainly, but if you're going to miss a season, that was the time to do it because there just wasn't that much to miss. And if he comes back at full strength, I see no reason why he can't be, you know, an above average player as he was. I mean, what did he have in 2018? You know, 26 homers, yep. You know, about 35% above average. And the only thing is he's had one full season. That's it. So he's only shown it once, but that season didn't look like a fluke to me. And there's really no good reason why he can't come back. I think the question is just going to be, is he around in 2 or 3 years when this team is competing and he's 32 or 33, or has he cycled out? Like, is it Kelenic, Lewis, and Rodriguez in the outfield at that point and he's moved on somewhere else? That I don't know. But yeah, as far as this season goes, I'm pretty in. I think he's going to have a good year.
Good deal. Well, Mike Petrello, MLB.com, we really appreciate you joining us, man. Thanks.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Thanks, Mike Petrello joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. And this hour of the show brought to you by my guys over at Greg's Japanese Auto. Greg and Dave are back, baby. This hour of the show brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Service. Coming up next, yesterday at about this time, Bump, I posed a question about Russell Wilson, and it had to do with his recent sort of public criticism of offensive line play. Not something that you want your quarterback to say if you're an offensive lineman. There's a couple of different ways to look at that, though, and we'll talk about that next. We got Michael Bumpus filling in. Wyman and Bob will be back here on 710 ESPN Seattle and talk a little Russell Wilson.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. We got Michael Bumpus sitting in. Michael Bumpus with a very high CIFCO rating. Do you know what I mean by CIFCO? Do you know that one? This is an old defensive coach that we had. Can I bleeping count on him? And on him is O-N-E-M. You have a high CIFCO rating. You can rely on him. You know you can count on him. You know who else you can count on has a high CIFCO rating? Greg's Japanese Auto. Greg's Japanese Auto Parts and Services, they do a great job. It's good to have them back in the fold. Yesterday at about this time, Bump, I was posing this question to Bob. With Russell complaining about his offensive line, and taking all this into account from the standpoint that, you know, offensive linemen, that's a tight group. They are bonded by misery. Because they don't get a lot of credit. The only time they're noticed is if they screw up. There are people out there trying to evaluate their play that I think it's the hardest position group to rate or grade or anything like that. Even though Pro Football Focus tries to do it anyway. So I mean, when you have did Russell call anybody out? No, but he did publicly complain about getting hit. So, yeah, he was basically, and a lot of people said, well, he threw his offensive line under the bus. I'm like, I don't know if it's that drastic, but it's still something that you probably shouldn't do. So the question that I posed was, what if it's Corey Linsley, and he's a, you know, franchise center, PhD, as Ray Roberts says, in center. We haven't had a guy like that since Max Unger, and he's trying to decide between here and another place. Well, the other place, the quarterback didn't publicly complain about the offensive line. So, I mean, could that come back to bite him, do you think? Is that something that could be a problem as far as attracting free agents here?
Man, Dave, I don't think so. I think it's not a problem in attracting the free agents that you want here. Guys who want to be the solution to a problem, who want to help make a football team better. If you have a guy who's worried about what Russell Wilson is saying and doesn't he feels some type of way about it. Is he a competitor? Is he a guy that you want to place some responsibility on and coming here and trying to change some things? I think to some guys, it might rub them the wrong way. But those aren't the guys you want. You want the guys to be like, oh, yeah, you got an O-line problem over there? I got you. Line me up. Let's fix this thing.
I'll tell you what, that's exactly what Bob Stelton said yesterday. He said, you know, maybe he's the kind of guy that's like, well, you know, and then, you know, if Russ or whoever, they're like, you're the solution. You're the reason why we got you in here so that won't happen anymore. And yeah, it could go the other way. But I was just thinking about it because as a linebacker, I saw what the offensive linemen had. I mean, you could tell they were just such a tight group and they stick together and they kind of always sort of regulated the pulse of the team and, you know, and also they're the biggest, you know, baddest dudes that, you know, pretty much as a group, the most poundage, the group that probably could win in a fight against any other group except maybe D-line. So, yeah, I mean, it was they always have kind of stuck together. And like I said, they're bonded by misery because they don't get any of the credit. Only when they jump off sides, only when they give up a sack or whatever. So that's the only time they're noticed. And I just thought that might be – that's one way to look at it. But, yeah, posing that question – I thought really brought to light like how un-Russell-like that is. Like if you'd have told me last year, 2 years ago, even after his rookie year, that he would say something like that publicly, something negative, and maybe it wasn't super, like I said, he wasn't saying, oh my gosh, I'm getting killed out there, my offensive line's not blocking. No, it was just more of like, yeah, I've been getting hit too much and that can't happen. I mean, I just would have never thought you would hear something like that come out of Russell Wilson.
No, Dave, and I think that's what kind of has everyone shook. This is out of character. Russell doesn't say that. Russell would never say something like that. And then at the same time, a lot of people ask Russell to be transparent and be honest and not just be the business guy, the company man, and say the right things. And as soon as he does, oh, no, Russell, he threw his guys under the bus. And I could get where people can feel that way, but I just don't think that's what it was. He was just speaking facts. Hey, I'm tired of getting hit. I get hit a lot. He is the most hit quarterback in the league. You take it how you want to. I don't think there was any malice in what Russ was saying. I think he got caught up in an interview. I think it was Dan Patrick asked a good question, and he got the answer he was looking for out of him. Now Russell has to deal with it, but for people to think that Russell is a bad guy or he doesn't like his teammates or he's throwing guys under the bus, I don't see it that way. I just see him as being honest. Be careful what you wish for, because we've always been asking for this, right? Russ, just be real and give us the raw uncut. That's what he did. Now people are upset.
Yeah, well, and especially nowadays, this is a time where you really have to watch, you know, what you say, because, I mean, if somebody you know, says something that's insensitive or whatever, they'll get called out, you know, in all kinds of different ways. And so, you know, I just thought he would be maybe a little bit more careful in this situation, because, yeah, I mean, everybody's going to take this and just blow it up, which is exactly what happened and exactly why I think, you know, his agent Mark Rogers is entirely behind the whole thing. I just hate to see it make him into something that he's not, because that's if you have to be you, and if you're not, then you're acting. And everybody always thought, I thought early on, everybody thought Russ was, his whole thing was kind of an act, but then we saw that it wasn't. We saw that it was, he's, that's just who he was. And that's why I say, you know, it was just very un-Russell-like. But I appreciate your perspective of kind of, you know, toning it down a little bit. And I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, as far as how important that is, and, you know, is he ever going to be able to, you know, make up to his teammates over it? I don't think it's that dramatic. It's just a little bit weird. But how do you see it ending? Do you think he's going to go to his O-line and say, guys, you know, hey, behind the scenes, I was just trying to this, that, and the other? You know, what do you think Pete and John say? I mean, I don't think they're ever going to say anything unless they absolutely have to. And that's, you know, that's the luxury they have, is that they don't have to say anything if there's no NFL event.
Yeah, and Dave, I think Russell is aware He knows what's going on around him. It's not like he's tucked off in his mansion in California and he's not listening to anything, right? He knows that people feel some type of way about what he said, and it can be perceived a certain way. So what should a great leader do? First guy hits up is Dwayne Brown. Look, Dwayne, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just talking about getting hit. I wasn't targeting you guys. It's a bigger picture. It's the play calling. It's me holding the football. It's us getting the pass pro down. There's a lot of things that contribute to him being sacked a lot. And I think he realizes that. And I think smart football players realize that. It's the people who don't dive deep and just take it for surface value. You know, this is what he said. This is what he meant. There's layers to that. So I think he's communicated. And I think if he hasn't, then he will. But I also think that the guys who know him the best, the guys who are in the huddle with him, are going to give him a pass. Guys say things sometimes, and it can be misunderstood. At least that's how I would take it. I'm not an offensive lineman. We talked to Ray Roberts. Ray's hot. You know what I mean? So I'll take a sprinkle of what Ray thinks, because he's an old lineman and he feels some type of way. And then I'll take a sprinkle of what I feel. And I feel like there has to be a middle ground to where it didn't mean to just be disrespectful. He wasn't throwing guys under the bus, but he realizes the effects of his words.
Yeah. I just very weird what his agent, when he got together, what they thought they were going to accomplish. Because, you know, like, is it create a sense of urgency? A sense of urgency. You think there's ever a time when they're not, they don't have a sense of urgency? Every day is an emergency in the NFL, if you ask me. I mean, trying to get the best players. And that's the thing, you know, you talk about the offensive line and what they've done. I mean, here's the point I made yesterday, and I know we got to go to break here real quick, but the thing that it worked out with Damian Lewis. It did not work out with other, you know, draft choices and things. And so far, it's worked out really well. But somebody could even say, you know, look, Damian Lewis, if we had this attitude last year at the draft, you might have said, well, why didn't they draft a guard in the first round or the second round? Why did they wait till the third round? Well, it worked out, right? So, I mean, they've done those kinds of things before. And, you know, all of a sudden, making it this priority, it just because you do that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work out. I mean, you're trying as hard as you can to make these things work out. And God bless, it turns out that, you know, a third rounder and Damian Lewis really worked out. But somebody, you know, could say, well, they're not urgent enough. They didn't take him in the first or the second round. Well, you know, I mean, it's always an emergency, I guess, is my point. Well, coming up next on Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumps filling in. And by the way, this hour of the show is brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. We're going to talk about Jared Kelenic. We did What If Wednesday earlier, Bump, and Jared Kelenic hit an opposite field bomb in the game today against the Chicago Cubs, and we'll talk about whether or not we're going to see him in the majors this year. That's next on Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus filling in. I'm going to tell on myself, we got a hard out coming up here, okay? That means they take it out of your hands. My first year, Bump, 2009, I had a hard out here, and I heard that. And I was like, no matter what, you have to be out at 56:30. I'm like, oh, okay. So then they start telling me, like, 30, 15, and all of a sudden I, like, panicked. And right before the hard out hit, I was like, okay, thanks for listening, and welcome to the show. And then it cut me off, and I was like, welcome? What are you doing? So we got that coming up here, Bump. I get panicky, okay? I'm going to choke.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, nah, we're going to hear.
You.
Okay, I appreciate you. Cactus League report coming up with Gary Hill. But before we get to that, let's listen to Jared Kelenic. First of all, he hit, I don't know how you feel about him, Bump. I don't know if you feel a certain kind of way. I like when you say that. Bump Bob and I always talk about how Michael Bump says, yeah, I feel a certain kind of way about this guy. But Jared Kelenic, I mean, the guy's got a lot of confidence and some might say cockiness. But today, during a Cactus League game against the Chicago Cubs, Scott Service is being interviewed. And while he's being interviewed, in the background, you can hear Jared Kelenic hitting an opposite field home run.
But I've often said, I've dealt with minor league players, young players, for a long time before I got this job, that players will let you know when they're ready. They really will. And that's just not the physical part of the game. Go, keep going. Anyway.
That's gone. Kelnick.
Sorry, I thought
takes it up and out.
Good day to hit here over in Mesa. The ball is carrying. Good for him.
What do you see on that swing? I know you're busy talking to us.
Why does he have to discount it? Come on, service. What are you doing, man? He's like, oh, a nice day to hit here. Oh, the wind caught it a little bit. Maybe he's just trying to – he doesn't want too high of expectations for his rookie guy.
Yeah, that's what it is. He's like, horrible timing, Jared. Horrible timing. Yeah. I like Jared Kelenic. I got a word for you you can use here, Dave.
Okay.
You know how they say Jared Kelenic got that swag, right? And I train young athletes, so they keep me hip. He got that swag-oo, Dave. We call it swag-oo.
Swag-oo.
This kid got that swag-oo. He steps up to the plate. And, you know, and I'm no baseball guy. I follow baseball. I like baseball. When I was in high school, if it wasn't a fastball, I wasn't touching it, right? Yeah. I just wasn't touching it. But you can look at a man when he stands at the plate and just see his confidence. You can feel his confidence. And every time Kelenic is at the plate, I'm like, man, this dude's ready. He believes in himself. He's confident. And you know, Dave, once your confidence is gone as an athlete, you have nothing. So don't do anything to hurt this young man's confidence because he's got that swag-oo, Dave.
The swag-oo. How do you spell that with a couple O's at the end? Just swag-oo?
Hey, however you want to spell it.
Okay. I'm with you. I would make it uncool. So I'm just going to leave it alone because I will make it uncool. I don't know if you ever felt like this, Bump, but there were times in the NFL where I would sit on the – even in between series and just go, man, I can't play this game. Like there's a little voice in the back of your head just going – and it didn't last for very long. But, I mean, there was times like during weeks I had a slump the second year in my career. It was like my first year starting and all of a sudden I just couldn't – you know, I couldn't play the way I wanted to. And that's something that, you know, there wasn't mental coaches back then. You know, you weren't going to sports psychiatrists or anything like that. You just kind of had to suck it up and work through it. But let's listen to a couple more quotes from Kelenic because, you know, a lot of times there's false bravado. There's false, you know, confidence. I don't think this guy has that. But you know, I'm sure he's going to have some down times. But when you listen to him speak and the way that he talks about things, I feel like it's real.
Well, and this quote here or this cut we're about to hear, he was specifically asked, do you want to go back to the alternate spring training site? That's the dilemma the Mariners face, and he had an emphatic answer.
Absolutely not. You know, I went through one all summer last year, played extremely well all throughout the alternate site. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, it's not – you know, it's not sunshine and rainbows whatsoever. It's hard to develop at all when it comes to an alternate site. It's not real life games. You're not playing against other competition. And, but at the end of the day, like you kind of just, those were the cards that were dealt. And hopefully this year, you know, the dealer gave me different cards.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'd forgotten that they weren't playing games against other teams. I mean, it was I thought he was saying it at first because I'd forgotten about the whole pandemic thing. I was thinking it's like, oh, that's not any kind of competition for me down there. But yeah, there really wasn't that. So yeah, I mean, he makes a great point, and you know, I do like how how old is Kelenic? Is he 23 22 21? Wow, holy smokes. Yeah, and I know Julio Rodriguez is really young too, but I like what I'm hearing from him, and I wonder if it's going to rub any guys, some of the veterans. And baseball's kind of a different culture, Bump. I mean, if that stuff happens in the NFL, I mean, you get up. Remember when Terrell Owens came to town? Can't remember what year that was, but I think it was probably 2012 or 11 maybe. But I know this, that Brandon Browner shoved his way to the front of the line so that he could go against Terrell Owens. And when Terrell Owens came off the line, Brandon Browner just grabbed him, locked him up, and threw him down. So that's the kind of treatment you get for cockiness in the NFL. Major League Baseball, maybe a little bit different.
Yeah, football is, you can put hands on a man. You know what I mean? Like, you can impose your will.
You could brush him back with a pitch, maybe. I mean, maybe somebody throws at him or something. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be received from some of these, the veteran guys.
Well, we're talking veterans on their team. I feel like you're not gonna brush them back with a pitch. Now, veterans across the league might do that, but baseball is dangerous. That's why I stopped playing, Dave. I saw a curveball look like it's gonna hit me in the head, and then I turn my back, and it's a strike. Like, you know what? This game ain't for me. I'd rather get hit by another person than this ball flying at me. So, yeah, it's different ways to handle business in each league.
Yeah, I always make this joke that I probably would have been like a Major League Baseball player, except for Beanball Byron in eighth grade. There's this big, you know, Beanball Byron was one of these guys. His name was Byron. I can't remember his last name. He's one of these guys in eighth grade that, like, had a beard. And he was known for plunking people. And I was like, we'll be fine. Big deal. What's the big deal with it? And he plunked me in the ribs. And then I was never the same, Bump. Never the same as a player.
Nope. Yeah. No, thank you.
All right. Well, Bump, thanks for joining us, man. I really appreciate it. And we always enjoy having you on. Thanks for filling in on short notice.
Anytime, Dave.
All right. We're going to give way to Gary Hill and the Cactus League Report. I want to thank Danny O'Neill, of course, Michael Bumpus, John Clayton, and then we had Mike Petrello on as well from MLB.com. Hopefully we'll get Bob back here tomorrow. I think he'll be back, and we'll have a normal show, which starts at 2 o'clock. Wyman and Bob, 710 ESPN Seattle.